This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. The South is known for its hospitality, and when I think of hospitality, especially in Acadiana, one name comes to mind, today's guest, Michael Dumit. Currently partnering with the City Club, Michael Dumit was the founder of Michael A. Catering Experience that later evolved into Michael's Ballroom and then, of course, A La Carte. A New Iberian native, Michael's experience in the catering industry includes all types of Mardi Gras events, from carnival balls to royalty parties. His experience with carnival is a result of his working with the Washington Mardi Gras for more than 20 years and for Lafayette Cruise for more than 45 years. Michael Dumit has also been recognized as the king of a member of Mardi Gras Cruise. Michael's tremendous reputation has influenced other restaurateurs, and he even has a sushi roll named after him at Tsunami. Michael, I'd like to welcome you to today's episode of Discover Lafayette.
Jan, thanks. It's such an honor and a pleasure. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you here, and I want to have a disclaimer before we start. We're neighbors.
We are.
And friends, and you have been a very kind neighbor for the past 18 years, putting up with our various puppy dogs, and one of them in particular, Phoebe, that would, she was a rabble-rouser, and it would, you know, stir a little commotion in the neighborhood. So I want to thank you for your kindness.
I had two Cocker Spaniels then, and they were at each other's throats for sure.
Luckily, we had a fence.
Yes.
Well, look, we're here post Mardi Gras, and I called you after Mardi Gras with the idea for interviewing you because it occurred to me as I was around a lot of your family, including Pauline Jeremy and many other family members, that you and your family have been entrenched in Mardi Gras for quite a long time, as I said in the introduction. And an even more interesting story is about your family's history in moving to South Louisiana, first locating to New Iberia, and then, of course, into the Lafayette area. So I thought if we could, this would be an opportunity for all the people that admire you to know more about you and your family and to trace your history and the culture that you sustain through today in 2018.
Well, my family are Lebanese. They came here in the late 1800s. The Ackles, which is my mother's family, the Dumits, of course, my family. If memory and if history is correct, if I'm correct, excuse me, they came together. They were friends in Lebanon and settled in New Iberia. And the Ackles and the Dumits were neighbors, very close, and each family had at least 10 siblings.
Oh, wow.
And so as a result, we're such a big family. Mm-hmm. And with marriage all over the place, I'm related to this one, that one, and everyone, you could almost say.
I saw that at a particular luncheon. I remember that. I had no idea.
We're very close. We've always been close. And it's so many years ago, growing up, before the television and all of this, our families visited every night. There is a saying that we used to say, we would ask my mother and my father, where are we going to set up tonight? Mm-hmm. Meaning, what family member were we going to? Was it going to be a grandmother? Would it be an uncle, an aunt? And this is how it all came about. Because if you went somewhere, they certainly served you something. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother, Dumit, was the most fabulous cook.
Oh, was she?
I mean, to tell you, she could cook. My grandmother, Ackle, not so. She usually had somebody cook for her. But all of these things led to my appreciation of foods. And then my mother was a fabulous cook. And my aunt, Emily Dumit Hinton, was an awesome cook. And so I got involved every night with these people cooking. Mm-hmm. And it just came to be, it was hospitable.
Right.
It was fun.
Now tell me, let's go back when your family, when they originally moved here, what brought them to the United States, if I may ask?
The climate, the region. And
close to home, that feeling.
And the Catholic part of the our communities here, because they were, of course, Christian in Lebanon, and they came here because of the persecution. And so they wanted to be involved in a very good Catholic Christian community.
Okay. And so you grew up with that close-knit, faith-based, Christian faith-based culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to picture, by the time you were a little boy, your family had multiplied, and I can't even imagine how many children's tables there were.
There were a lot.
Because I know we grew up like that with, you know, you'd have the children's table, and it was quite a big event.
Oh, gosh,
to be moved to the main table, but you must have had an overflow.
We did, and it was very interesting. In both of my grandparents' homes, there was the main dining room where the adults sat, and then in there was the den area, so to speak, or the breakfast area where it was a huge table and we sat.
Yeah.
And eventually and gradually we got to the main dining room.
I see. Yeah, you had to grow up and people had to move on. So this was all in New Iberia. So how did you end up, and who else came with you to the Lafayette area?
Well, UL played a big part. Most of us went to UL instead of going to LSU. And so I moved. I was a student here at UL, and I loved it, SLI. And I never really went home. I stayed. Most of my family members came here and stayed. Like, for instance, Pauline.
Jeremy.
She lived at Bayou Shadows. I lived at Bayou Shadows.
That was the place to live, too.
And then it was just one of those things. My business started in New Iberia, my catering.
Oh, it did?
It did. There weren't any caterers in New Iberia. Let me put it that way. There was another. But I started catering because I just wanted to. I love food. You know, it was my thing. And before I knew it, I'd say after 2 or 3 years, Lafayette people began to hear about me and my foods. And my foods were all real basic foods then.
Were you a chef?
Oh, no.
You would farm that out? I thought I had read that, which surprised me.
No.
Watching your family cook, you knew when to delegate.
I can cook that way. But I never enjoyed cooking for the masses, but I know how to do it.
Right.
But anyway, to make... I was catering in New Iberia a lot, and some people heard about me, and I started catering here in Lafayette. And in the meantime, it was getting to the point where New Iberia was very basic. Lafayette was letting me do what I really knew what to do.
And it was booming.
And booming.
Yeah. When was that?
That was in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. It was really booming.
And so I just made this. I had a friend, and we became partners in the catering business with Michael, a catering experience. I took it from New Iberia to Lafayette, and it exploded in 4 months.
Really?
It was just that fast. Plus the fact that I was able to get the contract for the Hyman Center, which was then just the Lafayette Municipal Auditorium. I had a little edge there. My godmother was Gloria Knox, and she was on the board. Frem Bustani, a family friend, I was chairman of the board, so they needed a caterer. I opened up, and they said, Michael, do it, and I had no idea what all that was.
That's a big undertaking as a young man.
Right, but I did it. I did it because I just knew what to do. It wasn't, was not going to be a challenge where I would be scared. It was going to be a challenge that I was going to succeed.
Yeah, and then you'd have to deal with that growth. So, wow, that's, I didn't realize that, Michael.
Right. And as soon as I got into Lafayette, it was like Mardi Gras started coming to me. I had the experience of Mardi Gras in New Iberia. We had two crews, and of course I was a member of both, and I catered for both of them as a caterer in New Iberia. But I knew how to expand in Lafayette, and the Hyman Center, a contract made me and let me do that. And the event that really changed and started my business was the King's Luncheon.
Oh, yeah.
The King's Luncheon, when it was at the Hyman Center, was like an affair that people went almost just to go. And the first year I did it with Dan Bulany, I said, y'all don't have any decorations. You don't have
any. They didn't have all the flowers and everything.
Mm-hmm. And he said, we don't have the budget. I said, well, we're going to work on that. Mm-hmm. And I did a magnificent menu. But I got this guy from New Iberia, Alfred with Fabian's, to come in and do the flowers. And he did such an awesome job. And then we got some Apollo mantles and costumes.
Oh, awesome.
And used that as a backdrop. And from then on, it went on.
And it's a huge event today.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think people go, just like you said, to see the pageantry, the girls with their hats.
The girls and all
the king,
the food,
his speech.
Yes.
And it's just
and
an occasion.
And the pomp and circumstance. That's so much fun.
Very much pomp and circumstance. Mm-hmm. So, wow. So and then that was in the back, that was in the Bustani, the hall in the back, and I bet it was packed to the gill.
Gosh, that's why they had to move.
Yeah, to the Cajun.
Yeah, to the Cajun. And then it was no longer in my jurisdiction. I was so disappointed. I loved doing that.
You did it until the 80s when the Cajun Dome opened up.
Yeah. And did magnificent food displays.
I can imagine.
I'd have this guy come in from San Francisco. He was a native of Abbeville, Rusty Gaspar, and he was just fabulously talented. And he would come in and do all of these things that the women would go crazy over.
Of course,
when it was time to change from the cocktail time to the presentation and then to the second seating for dinner, I would have all of my staff pick up the tables like they were floats and they would march out. It was something. People would go crazy. They loved it.
Michael, I wish I'd seen that.
Oh, it was pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty,
gosh.
Pretty.
So this is the late, by then you're in the 80s, I guess. Mm-hmm. So you still had, and I was pronouncing that wrong. It's Michael. A catering experience. Mm-hmm. I was mispronouncing it. So you kept on with your catering, though. I mean, Mardi Gras, the King's Luncheon was just one part of what you did.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, when I moved here, when did you open A La Carte?
In 1988.
And so Michael's Ballroom was in between that, or did you have that?
No. I sold Michael's Ballroom to my cousin Madeline Bustani Hilliard.
Was that on Jefferson?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we had events there. I remember that.
And then
nice.
I opened up in the same month, A La Carte.
In the Oil Center.
Because I really wanted something small.
Yeah.
And I knew that I could put up a facility in the Oil Center, a ballroom, so to speak, that would really be the thing.
And it was wonderful.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And that lasted ever so long.
It did.
Mm-hmm.
And when I listen now on the radio and hear Petroleum Club on the radio, that was you.
That was
on the
me
radio.
First. Yes, yes. That was my. I did that menu every day. Y'all, people would come from all over. They'd say they were traveling through, and they'd stop by, and it was just my talking about my little buffet.
It was delicious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gosh. So, is this how you think of yourself? Do you think of yourself as a caterer, first of all, or is it more of the hospitality, making people feel welcome as they eat? Because I think of you, I guess the food is there, but it's your hospitality that draws people.
I think it's more of the fact that I love people.
I know.
And the opening of my restaurant was something that I didn't even think would ever happen, was the people coming in. Mm-hmm. And my greeting them and then having delicious food. My hospitality, I think, had a lot to do with my success. I really do.
I do too. You were a magnet. Mm-hmm. You are a magnet for people and to feel good.
Mm-hmm. You had to have a good atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But you had to have good food. Now, my kitchen, I had the most wonderful, fabulous cooks in my kitchen, okay? You could not curse in the kitchen. These were all beautiful ladies. And they believed a happy kitchen meant good food. And there were rosaries all around. Now, you know we'd have dishwashers, and you know the language of a dishwasher.
Well, but I don't, but I can imagine.
You can imagine.
Yeah.
Not at
none
all.
Of that.
There was that rosary. If anybody lost their temper, everybody had to be pleasant. That's why the food was good. Everybody whistled while they worked, so to speak.
Yeah, I know.
And
you
worked hard. Yeah. My cook sometimes would work from 7 o'clock in the morning till maybe 11 o'clock at night. That's how busy we were. And it was all from that little one kitchen, servicing the Hyman Center, doing the restaurant, and then off premise. That's really where I got.
Is that where you make money, like for a restaurant? I've never run a restaurant, but it seems that that's
catering.
Bread and butter. Mm-hmm. But the catering is really where you can be a success.
And I loved catering.
Yeah, yeah.
Loved it.
I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor and producer of today's show, Raider Solutions, a technology company which creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses, functioning as their complete IT department from networks, phones, hosting of servers, and a service-oriented help desk. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. So we were talking before the interview started. You are still catering. I mean, you're partnering with
City Club.
And I know you're at a point now where you're not looking to work full time, invest it like you did.
I love to, my friends go, and a lot of them do, because they are used to me in my events. They know that they don't have to worry if I will be at the helm of it. And so I do it that way, you know.
So you still have people you can call on, like servers?
Yeah, from the City Club. Okay. You see, we just use them. Uh-huh. I use them, and they have the most fabulous chefs. Donovan Broussard there is awesome.
Right.
He runs a kitchen that is perfect.
Right. Yeah.
And we share recipes, so that's the good thing. Mm-hmm.
So you don't really go back on your Lebanese heritage for your catering. You cater to what the market wants, or do you recommend, try this? Like, do you listen to what they want first, or do they ask you, you pick a menu?
I pick a menu. I do a custom menu, as I say. That might not be the right word, but I've used it forever. I customize a menu. And I have brought all of the Lebanese dishes into so many ways. For instance, in Mardi Gras, we have a Mediterranean tray. I have friends that'll come in, or I have people that'll come in and say they've never been to a Mardi Gras ball where you can get kibbe, grape leaves, and meat pies. That's unreal. But people love it.
They do love it.
You know, there's such a big Lebanese community here, and they love our food. Look how many restaurants, Lebanese restaurants we have, you know?
Right.
And that's like, for instance, for the balls that I do, I will do, say, 200 trays of the Mediterranean trays for each ball. People love them. They just want them.
Uh-huh.
And they hold well, so you can eat them, you know?
So do you, I know, like, some places you can't go in with outside food. You cater to the events around, like, if it's Bonaparte, let's say, a Monday night ball or whatever. Mm-hmm. You people meet before and after and all that.
Yes, and that's where I'm involved.
That's where you get involved.
With pre-parties, after parties, and stuff like that.
It's tough sometimes when you have to deal with the caterer not that they're not good, but if you have your own interest or own likes, you can't always get what you want when you have to deal with the caterer inside.
To me, whatever the customer wanted, I could do.
Right.
My cooks were good enough, and look up a recipe, and I can read a recipe and see if it's good or not. That's from my mother.
Right.
She had so many cookbooks and read so many recipes. I wish that she was still living so she could go and Google anything she wanted on recipes now, because she'd love to read a recipe.
Love that.
You know? And I can do that. I can look at something and see if it's good. And I can look at a dish and tell you if it's good or not.
Before you taste it?
Oh, yeah. Many is the time they would say, "Hey, did you taste it?" I said, "No, I don't have to." I'd walk in the kitchen. I said, "No, that doesn't look right, y'all."
Oh, no. Not brown enough? Not cooked enough?
It's just something. It was like
too bubbly,
right?
Michael, do you use cookbooks, or do you just
I love cookbooks, but I love family recipes. For instance, suppose your daughter is getting married and you want a certain thing. I want your recipe to do that certain thing. I don't want to go and find a recipe. You like it one way, we'll do it that way.
I see. Things I grew up with, that's so nice. So, go ahead.
I have a friend, Mary Alice Prejean, who supplied me with the most wonderful recipes. She collected them from the area, from from like the Normandy. She had all of their recipes and stuff like that. That's Mimi McGlasson's mother-in-law.
Yes.
And she and I would get together and really do some menus that were unreal from all the recipes that she had. And I have them all. And Pauline has them. Pauline's a historian, you know. She keeps all that kind of stuff. And she gets so angry if I don't give her every recipe so she can follow it.
Have you thought about doing a cookbook?
I have.
You want to do it?
I don't know. Really not. I like just to treasure what I have. Mm-hmm. And if later on somebody wants to share and Pauline has them, they could do it. You know?
And I do want to put a shout out to Pauline Jeremy. Mm. I was hoping she would join us. And I know she's hesitant to speak. And
she's shy.
She's shy, but she's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
And she's unreal. She's a lovely girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the plug I want to put in for Pauline, and I hope she listens to this, Michael, is that for both of my girls that were presented at the Southwest Mardi Gras, she gave us comfort. I never felt comfortable knowing that I was doing the right thing, and I could always call Pauline and say, Pauline, is this the white shade of white? And she would have told me if it wasn't, but what do I do now, and how do I handle this? Just such a gracious woman.
A lovely
beautiful
lady.
Too. But I, you know, I want to put in
husband,
that word.
Frank is a wonderful
He
man.
Is, yeah. Frank Jeremy. Yeah. So you talked about growing up. I'd like to get into the culture you grew up with, Michael, because this show is about Lafayette, Acadiana, and why people live here. And when you talked about seeing your family every day, at first I had to step back and say, wow, that's a lot. But that's what you grew up with. Your family is still really close.
Very.
What is it like in today's world where people, like, you know, I know some of the families moved away, the younger people in particular, you know, move different places, and they're here when they can be. What is it like today? How have you maintained your the family connections? And
well, we had a tradition with my Acco family, and this tradition lasted until my aunt passed away, my oldest aunt. We had to be together on Christmas, everybody. And sometimes it would be 80 to 100 people. Now, the next year, everybody went to their in-laws, but that next year, we all had to be back.
And so you kept close.
And it was
close.
Awesome, and we all miss it. But our family home in New Iberia was very big. It accommodated us. But we sold the family home, of course. And no one can do what we used to do because of the fact that we had a nucleus. We had my aunt and her sisters, my mother. And now we don't have that. And everybody has to go their own way with their own families. But once a year, every cousin and every sister and brother met. And that was fabulous.
You know, that one person can make such a difference. And my family was Aunt Pearl. She was my great aunt. And she died 21 years ago. And you know, when that person that really is the glue passes away, it can be hard to maintain that. Even though you love your relatives, it's really important to see each other.
Now, at family weddings, this will happen, but it's not the same.
No.
And, oh, of course, at funerals, and of course, it's not the same. But that idea of the, you had to, it was a tradition, and there were no ifs, ands, and buts. And Nanny, as we called her, Lawrence Boab, she was a powerful woman. And, I mean, we had to do it, but we loved it. We never complained because we see all our family.
Right. Are y'all, most of you, involved in Mardi Gras?
Everybody.
So who would that everybody be besides Pauline that
okay,
we mentioned?
Okay, well, like, for instance, Pauline's sister in Baton Rouge. There's a small little crew. She was queen of it, okay? My family in Alabama, in Mobile, where there's so much tradition for Mardi Gras there, they're all involved in crews and in debutante presentations, etc. So that's still going there. Now, the Mississippi people know there's no tradition in Jackson or anywhere in Mississippi about Mardi Gras. Here in Lafayette, we're all, everybody's in crews. All of the first cousins that are here.
They're all involved.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's quite a networking experience. When once you get involved, I can't think I've seen a nicer group of people mm-hmm. that donate their volunteer their time mm-hmm. year after year. I mean, mm-hmm. Pauline's been supervising the young women, I know, mm-hmm. For quite a while, and we're so grateful for them. But do you enjoy, you're still active in Mardi Gras?
Oh, I am. I'm very active with Troubadours. Uh-huh. I was active with Apollo because mm-hmm. I was the first president and the first captain, and I think I held the position of president 17 years. I can't remember right now.
Wow.
But there comes a time where you have to let the younger mm-hmm. group, you know, take over and do what they want to do.
Right.
Okay. But my main activities with Mardi Gras besides catering is Troubadours. I love it.
I
work
wonderful.
In all aspects of uh-huh. that. Darrell and Burris, who's the chairman, is such a dear friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I participate costume yearly, and mm-hmm. I enjoy that.
Did you help found Apollo? Is that what you're
yeah.
saying?
Uh-huh.
You know, I've never been.
Oh, my goodness.
I need an invitation.
Make sure you go next year.
I know I've missed out just
Please
on the pageantry.
Mm-hmm.
I will, because I've never been, and it's something I think
that was fabulous.
I need to go. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It started off so small.
Where did you start out? Where was the first?
One of the school gymnasiums.
Really?
Uh-huh.
They rented it out for
yeah.
the weekend?
Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting the way that evolved, okay? This man from New Orleans came into Lafayette, and the first meeting was held at my place at Bayou Shattis.
Oh, this
uh-huh.
is way back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And he guided us, and then we did the bowl. The ball became so popular, but we couldn't afford the ball.
Oh.
And when I mentioned as president then that we would start selling tickets, everybody was aghast. Of course not. So, well, Troubadour sells tickets.
Everybody sells. I mean, you
uh-huh.
have to pay for overhead.
And so we did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the ticket was maybe $15 first, and everybody was, oh, we died. And now I think they're $175.
They
but
are?
You get a show. You get, well, maybe it's $125 or $175.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure. You get a magnificent
yeah.
show for your money.
It's a memory.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. But it's hard to execute change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to bring it about. So back in the 70s is when y'all started that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I moved here in 83, and I knew it was really big at that point. I mean, it's always been big since I've mm-hmm. lived here. So, gosh. Well, anything you'd like to share with us, like any thoughts about, you know, looking back at a la carte or what you've done? Is there anything that you'd like to share about why you like living in this area and why you're still here?
I adore living in Lafayette. I have to say I miss New Iberia because of the memories. But Lafayette is so progressive. It's always been that way. And I see the progression of what has happened in the city. At the very beginning, when all of this was happening to me in my life, say in the early 80s,
mm-hmm.
you would see people's pictures in the paper and you knew everybody.
Right.
Today, it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a good feeling because it means so many more people have come in to the community and are taking over or doing
right.
and enjoying what everybody else likes.
Right, right. Yeah, the town has grown. It's a city, but I mean, we've grown so
mm-hmm.
much. And you've played such an integral part in the hospitality that people share here, Michael. I'd like to thank you
oh,
for all
pleasure.
You've done. And thank you for being such a kind person in my life.
Mm, thank you.
You touch a lot of lives.
You know, when we first met, we both gelled. We liked each other.
Yeah, yeah. I remember having you when we were building our house.
Right.
We were
mm-hmm.
older parents. I think Kelly was one when we moved in, and the neighborhood was different then. A lot of little people,
mm-hmm.
and you've been a good friend through
Thanks.
All those years. So thank you, Michael.
My pleasure.
And I'd like to thank also Raider Solutions. We're taping our show today in Raider Solutions. And I'd like to thank Jason Sikora, our engineer who makes this podcast possible. Jason, thank you for all you do. And I'd also like to thank you for listening. I'm really proud of this podcast, getting to have people like Michael Duman on. We talk about the culture of Lafayette and why it's a great place to live. And I hope that you'll share the word and share news about this podcast. You can listen to this podcast and all of our others on iTunes or Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast. And I encourage you to visit our website at discoverlafayette.net. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter and check out all of the podcasts and the guests that we've had. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift. Thank you for listening.